Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I am here today with Heather Spalding from Cambrian Technologies. Hello, Heather.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I am doing well. So for anyone listening, you may be wondering why there is someone different coming to you talking on the Startup Hustle podcast, but that is because Pipeline Entrepreneurs has taken over the Startup Hustle podcast for a week. And we are here as the sponsor of Startup Hustle podcast to talk about the amazing organization that is both Pipeline Entrepreneurs and also everything that Heather's doing with Cambrian. And the reason why we picked you, Heather, is not only are you an amazing entrepreneur, but you're also part of the Pipeline family. So excited to have you chatting with us today. So tell us about yourself. Tell us about what you're doing, how you got to be in what we will lovingly refer to as computer vision. And you can tell us all about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we started Cambrian many years ago now, but I didn't really join it seriously until 2016. Before that, I was working doing neuroscience research. And that's really my background. I, you know, got my degree. I was originally interested in paleontology. I got really interested in neuroscience during college. And so I started taking all the classes I could. I started working in a lab. I got hired by the NIH doing neuropharmacology. But I was still sort of trying to find my path. And so I started seriously considering biomechanical engineering. And I mean, this is things as like cochlear implants, prosthetics. There's so many cool, it's just a really cool field because there's so much where engineering could meet biology. And this was about the time, you know, I was looking into engineering degrees and stuff at this time. And that's when I met Joel Tepley, who I ended up marrying, but we hit it off and he has an electrical engineering background and he was also looking into biomechanical engineering. And so we start talking about ideas and what we wanted to create. And a friend of ours said, you guys need to check out computer vision. It was this new emerging technology in like 2010 or so when we were talking about this. And, you know, we looked into it and it's so cool because it's essentially training a computer to see and recognize things the way a human can see and recognize things. So for example, a white wall meeting a white wall meeting a white ceiling, for a human and even a kid, they could say, yeah, these are three separate surfaces. They're going in these angles. But for a computer, especially at the time, that was a really tough problem. You know, how would it know that these are separate surfaces? Mm-hmm. If you're close up, how would you know that they're going in these different directions? How do you determine that? And so when we first started out in computer vision, it was really like, well, how does the brain see? How does the brain know that this surface is different than the surface? What are some of the tricks that the brain uses? And how do we convert that into an algorithm so we can tell a computer to see that way? And so early on, that's what a lot of our early technology was built around, was sort of the principles of vision in a human. And then, you know, converting it to a computer. We had an early hand tracking app where you put your hand in front of your phone screen and would do like a basketball shooting action. And it was like a pop a shot game. So you could shoot a basketball and try to make a shot. Gave you 30 seconds to shoot as many hoops as you can. Well, that year Kinect came out. And when we saw Kinect, we were like, okay, Nintendo's working on this. So we'll let Nintendo handle that. But we were interested in other forms of computer, all forms of computer vision. So we talked about painting nails, putting makeup on a face. What we ended up doing, because honestly, it just seemed really interesting to us, was putting a paint on a wall surface. We said, wouldn't it be cool if you could change the color in your room? And this was, I think, iPhone 4 or 4S was out at the time. So not super advanced, you know. Not super advanced. Right. Apps were sort of new. The iPhone was sort of, not everybody had them like they do now, but we firmly believed that everybody was going to move into this direction of smartphones. We said, you know, a few years from now, this is going to be what everybody uses as their computer. And so we were mobile first. We've always been mobile first. So we built this app called Wall Painter, just the most basic thing, but you could change the RGB values and stuff. And we released it. And I always like to tell this story because we made our first app, we made the icon and followed all the rules and put it out there and published it.
Yes.
And the first night we got 12 downloads and we were like high-fiving and celebrating 12 people. Oh my gosh, 12 people found our app. We just released it. Wow. And then the next morning it was up to 12,000. And so it just, I think a lot of people were searching for the solution. It's tough visually to picture what a color looks like in your space, especially, you know, if I have red walls and I want to paint this room like a light gray, the whole lighting of the room is going to change. It's very hard for people to picture. And so I think it struck a chord with people. And so from there, we started releasing better and better versions,
which live
versions
of this. By the way, let's just pause on that. You were the first live AI. I mean, like that's
people started reaching out.
That's a really big accomplishment. That's not a small thing.
Yeah. And it's always been kind of one of the building blocks of who our company is and what we believe in is. We want to push humans and technology forward, you know? So we, for the betterment of people, we want to push the envelope on technology. We want to build the hard stuff, you know, and have it be the norm, you know, that's the new norm. And then we go from there. And it got the attention of a lot of paint companies and companies around the world. We did a small project for Lowe's. We licensed to Crown Paints in the UK. And then Home Depot reached out to us. And that was the first major license that we had, a major, major project, was the Project Color app. And so, I mean, we were still working full time at other jobs at the time. Joel was with another startup. We had young kids. And so we were really juggling this crazy amount of work and having a startup and building a company while having full-time jobs. Yeah. And we were taking lunch breaks from our work jobs and getting on Cambrian sales calls, you know? It was a nutty time. And I think our biggest question that we asked to probably everybody in the startup world is, when do you make the leap?
Is that the answers that you got? I always feel
when do you know you're ready to jump? And everyone just said, you'll know. And sure enough, that's always the answer. I know. Well, they can't tell you when you'll know, but I guess it depends on how old you are. But for me, what made sense is my contract with KU-Med was the project I was working on. I wrapped up at KU-Med, and I had talked to my boss about you know, leaving and stuff. And the timing just sort of worked. So early in 2016, I was the first one to take the leap into doing Cambrian full time. And we hired a few people. I was, I think, very naive and trusting about hiring practices then. And I trusted people really easily at their word. So I learned a lot from that. But we really started doing this full time. And later that year, Joel jumped into Cambrian full time, and we have been since. So we've been growing from there, and we've licensed this to dozens of companies all around the world.
That, that's not an easy transition. We went from either, like,
to paint only to flooring. And the great experience. No, and that was very crazy. So we had this really large flooring company, Shaw Floors, who's owned by Berkshire Hathaway, say, "We love what you do for paint. Can you do it for floor?" And that kind of the end of 2016, over the holidays, they said, you know, we have in the beginning of January, we have this big trade show. Could, you know, we'll invite you there. Show us what you have, whatever you have. And so I put two of my developers, they had about 2 weeks to make a working demo for floor, and these brilliant people managed to pull it off and get a version of a visualizer tool working with flooring products. And that was enough to get us the contract with them. Yeah. And then from there, they were really interested because that industry is very much on, you know, desktop computers and online, and they're not all wanting to download, especially with all the assets you have for flooring. It's not just the RGB value, it's actual images that can get really heavy. And so we said, this is a different problem.
That seems like a very different transition, because from a development perspective,
and the solution was to have it
developers that are working on apps
on a browser. So it's not an app you download, but it's browser
versus someone who's like by making that transition development.
Right.
Yep. The camera itself, right? Yeah.
Well, you have so much control with apps, and you can get all the user permissions, and you have a lot of information coming from the camera and phone itself. Right. You have an accelerometer, you have all this information. And when you're doing a live video, it's essentially a series of photos. So you can build this whole 3D space. Versus a still photo where a human, again, going back, a human could see a still photo and say, well, that's the floor, and this is behind this thing, and this is probably vertical, and this is coming towards you. That, again, that's hard for a computer. How do you tell a computer that? And so we put a lot of time and thought. This was about the time that we won Launch KC. So I won the grand prize of Launch KC, which is incredibly cool. It was wonderful for our company because it was kind of the first time a lot of people had heard of us. And that money allowed us to build the web tool, which is what we're using now. And the web tool allowed us to kind of rethink our licenses, because previously to build an app for a person, they had to be a larger company, because we couldn't just white label apps. You can't actually do that. You can't spam the app store. You can lose your developer license. You lose 100 of the same apps. So, you know, we thought about, do we own the app, and they have different logins and stuff, and how big is this app going to be? Well, by moving to web, it made it a really simple model for licensing. You just drop it on your own website, because all these flooring companies and paint companies have at least a basic website. And so that opened a lot of doors for us to grow and scale. And so that kind of leads us to where we are now. We're trying to build a fully automated portal. We have it up, actually.
Without ever needing a salesperson.
We're kind of going over UI and finishing
touches.
Without
ever needing a salesperson.
We've built this portal so people can come and check it out, sign themselves up, buy the license online, you know, directly, and get it up and running on their site. What'd you say?
Yeah.
So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for them to get up and running. And with a visualizer tool,
one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, so when you initially started,
it's been very cool,
and you went from like 12 downloads to like 12,000, I'm assuming those were all someone like myself who's like, hey, I'm gonna paint this room, like, and it basically a B2C model. Did you know you wanted to go B2B, or did you, or was that kind of just part of the evolution?
Yeah. It was. It was all part of the evolution. We, as much as we liked B2C, I mean, it was very cool because we were like the number one utility app in a number of countries, yep. and number one paid utility. And it's really cool because those are essentially who we built this for. That end user, we want them to have that experience of like, that's the color I want. You know, I don't have to get all these swatches. I figured it out. I know what it's going to look like. You know, that's the user. And that's the experience we want. We were really, and we continue on a daily basis to be approached by companies saying, we need this solution. Yep. And that's a way for us to reach all those people with a solution. They have the products ready to go. And unlike paint, I mean, there's interesting differences when you move to different products. So paint is, you know, an RGB value. It's
flooring.
Nobody owns that. And so we could just put whatever color.
Yeah.
Well, for flooring, somebody owns those photos. You know, that's their product. And so we can't just pull in somebody's floors and start selling them, you know, because that's not our stuff to sell. And so with flooring, it has to be a different model. So for flooring, what we're finding is the companies know that their customers want the solution. They're reaching out to us saying, what's the work like? How do I get started? What, you know, with all these questions. And we've tried to automate this as much as possible. And where we were hitting our bottleneck was some of the data entry. We got it down
you
to about 2 weeks to get them set up and signed out.
But, without you having,
you know, I kept telling my developers, how can we make this faster? How can we scale this so people are just signing up while we're sleeping, you know? And exactly. That's what we want to happen. You know, that's exactly it. So, you know, that's what we've been working towards, and the whole back end set up that way. And so now we're just kind of trying to make a portal where, you know, they can see what their collections look like. They can, you know, it walks them through how to put it together. They can change it at any time. You know, they can see what it's going to look like, and then they can publish it to their site. And so really it's like from end to end, the visualizer tool is going to be really automatic. And then there's, of course, add-ons, you know, analytics and stuff that they can add on. But by moving to this model, I think it frees us up to just keep innovating and making the product better and better. And then the cool thing, of course, is because of what we had to do, we had to figure out how to build
now.
A full 3D model, a 3D environment from a single photo. So we can put this into photos of real estate where people want to change colors, add furniture, change flooring, you know, while shopping for a house. There's a lot of applications. Yeah. And any 3D model we can place in a space, so furniture and curtains, anything. So it was just a matter of, and a lot of this is due to Jill Meyer at ScaleUp and learning some of these scaling practices for, okay, identifying your bottlenecks and figuring out how to solve them. And then of course, Pipeline helping so much. I mean, I was with Pipeline through this transition of how do we get this out to as many people as possible, and who's our customer, and, you know, how do we sell this? And really just
right
all these questions
that you
think you've nailed down.
That, you
and then
gave me a great
the digger,
segue
the more you dig deep into it, you're like,
today's
yeah,
episode
should,
of
you know,
Startup Hustle.
There's better. I could be doing better.
And we are
so
a fellowship
cool.
program for high growth entrepreneurs.
So I think we're in a really
and
great place now.
We are
place,
currently
really
recruiting
place.
For our 2022 fellowship class, and you can learn more and apply online at pipelineentrepreneurs.com. So one of the things that you mentioned that I think is super valuable to talk about right now, both from a pipeline perspective and also because you mentioned it. So, you know, we're starting new programming next year for entrepreneurs who are working full time, who are pre-pipeline. And so female, minority, and rural entrepreneurs, which, you know, we're recruiting for that now. And they specifically are people who are working full time on their company and also have a full time job. Because not everyone has the luxury or an even playing field to say, oh, I'm just going to take that leap of faith. And I would argue that some of the most resilient and toughest entrepreneurs are the ones who have to make that juggle between, like you said, I have kids, I have a family, I'm working a job full time, and I'm also doing this and taking calls at lunch. I mean, you can multitask and juggle a lot of stuff if you can pull that off. And so that is why we are starting this new programming, because we know that there are entrepreneurs just like you and Joel were back then that need the help of Pipeline, but maybe aren't at a place where they're running their company full time, which is what it takes to get Pipeline proper. So tell us about that. I've lived that life. I know that you have. So like what, you know, when everyone said to you, oh, you'll know, like, at what point did you, I know your contract was up, but if it hadn't been for that, like, what were the other things outside of like, you'll just know, like, what were the indicators for you?
Oh man. Right. We had, and it actually ended up falling through. We had a really big contract that we were redlining back and forth, ready to sign. And it was like, okay, we need to go jump in with both feet, you know, hit the ground running as soon as this was ready. And that was part of it where it was like, we had enough of a runway to feel like, for one, this is a workload that we can't half-ass, you know, it was enough of a workload that was like, we have to focus on this whole time. We have to bring other people in to work on this. And then the other was, it was enough money for plenty of runway, and that contract fell through. And so having hired, you know, three more people besides myself, it was like, okay, well, we got to get really serious about this and really ramp up sales. And, I love to hear that you're doing this program for kind of pre-pipeline, because I know personally, I felt like we needed so much guidance. And at that time, I really was like, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. I mean, we started this thing, but I really didn't feel like I belonged in the entrepreneur space. I didn't feel like that was my label, because I was like, well, what have I done that's really that successful or serious? Anybody could have done what I've done, but I had so many questions, especially like legal questions, like how much should I be paying an attorney for this contract? We know we don't have that much money. And if they're charging me, you know, $200 an hour, I probably can't afford that, you know? And then all the terms and conditions for, forming a real company where you're hiring people and the hiring practice, there was so much to consider. And I felt a little bit adrift and a little bit overwhelmed. And I know that there were resources there, but I think the problem was I wasn't aware of the resources because I was adrift. I think, you know, maybe in rural areas and stuff, especially, or feeling, maybe females more so than males feel a little bit of that imposter syndrome, where I had a hard time with the label of like, you know, entrepreneur, where I was like, well, anybody could have done this. I don't know that I belong here. But then, you know, once you start up, you realize, oh, everybody's in that position. Yeah. Everybody started something on the side while they're working on other things. And, everybody's had to find that balance. And I know for us, Joel specifically says having kids and doing that, it just made him a better business person, because one, you have a greater responsibility, but you also have to be that much more focused. Like you said, when every second of your day has to be devoted to something, to get the job done, you have to really hammer down and focus. So for us, having just a little bit of a safety net, Joel was still working at another job. So we still had healthcare and stuff, and healthcare has probably been our biggest pain, having moved full time into Cambrian, but we still had a bit of a safety net. And I think, you know, you talk about privilege, and stuff. I think a lot of that goes a long way, having even family in the area. So we knew if I absolutely had to get to a meeting, we could have someone watch the kids. If I, you know, if I fell really seriously sick, right, we could have help.
Amen. And that's exactly it.
And feeling really like we could take a little bit more of a risk.
You know, that is,
I think a lot of that is where we want our privilege. And
you know, you mentioned, I think, you know, kind of like
that safety net
as female founders really struggling with that, and kind if of it doesn't come from your and I will say
family or your at least from Pipeline's perspective, as money, we have become, then it needs to come from the community.
You know, we have this year's fellowship class has 6 of the 13 are female entrepreneurs and female founders. And one of the things that you said was that you felt like, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. And I have to say, I have heard that so many times. I've never heard that from a male founder. Could just be my personal experience, but I've only ever heard that from female founders where they're like, oh, I didn't even know I was an entrepreneur. And I, right? And was it just you thought, well, and I think it's also interesting that you mentioned, well, anyone can do this, when in reality, no, they couldn't. But you feel like that. You tell yourself those things. Like, oh, this is everybody. It's not, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not that.
Interesting. I didn't, yeah. Yeah. Right. And that's the thing that's interesting. I don't think it was until even Pipeline. I mean, I was years into my company and into Pipeline when you're saying, what was your first entrepreneur? You know, what were things that you did as a kid and stuff? And several of us in our class had little businesses when we were kids. And I never even, it didn't even occur to me. I had, my story was that I made a lemonade stand and we didn't know what to charge. So that's always my issue, is what to charge. But I said, hey, let's say it's free, but we accept tips and then they can just give us like change. I was like, cause otherwise it's just going to be 15 cents, 5 cents here and there. So what ended up happening, we made a fortune. What ended up happening? Okay. Bye, sweetie. Sorry. That was my son. That's also the life of a founder, having your kids just walk up during a meeting. What happened is we would sell the lemonade. Every single mom that pulled up to us said, you poor things probably aren't making any money. And they would dump their purse, all that loose change in the bottom of their purse. They'd say, here you go, and give us a handful. And it'd be like $2.50. And they kept doing it. And I think in that first day we made like $30. For some cheap powder water mixture. And I talked to, you know, some of the other people in my class, you know, Lederman, you know, well, he's a big personality, a great, great human being, sold oranges as a kid. He would buy oranges and sell them to classmates and stuff. And we all had these stories of, and I used to teach for exchange for whatever. I used to teach, you know, drawing classes when we had indoor recess. I'd say, meet me under the table, and I'll, you know, if you bring your payment and your paper and your, you know, I it's so funny to go back and kind of recognize those things. So, it's interesting that happens to females more than males. It's a shame. But one of the things, whenever I talk to people, and I still come across, you know, I've been running for this company for how long? We've had so many contracts with major companies, and I still feel like, oh, am I really in a position to educate others or talk about my experiences? But the truth is I've learned so much from where I was. Yeah. I would have loved somebody telling me some of these things. And so I kind of go from that point of view. And when I talk to, you know, I volunteer for some stuff where high schoolers are coming up with ideas. And one of the things I always try to tell them is it is so easy to start a company. I felt like I had to have permission, I guess. I thought, you know, I didn't even know that was a thing you could do. I felt like that's not something I'm allowed to do because that's not my background. I'm not a business person. I'm a scientist. But here we are, we did it. And it was as easy as going to like the Kansas Secretary of State website and registering a business. And then you go from there and then you figure out, okay, what do I need for insurance? What do I need to hire people? And you just, next thing you know, you have employees. And I say like next thing you know, and oh my, how did we end up here and stuff? And there was a lot of work in there. I mean, this was over years and a lot of falling and getting back up.
Almost like that fear of failure,
say the word
right?
resilience. Like, I think that's probably the best word to describe.
What does that say? And it's like,
is resilience. It's a roller coaster.
When you think
coaster.
About it, I think that's probably
and
you're having
you have
kids.
To celebrate
like,
all
once
the
you have kids,
ups,
you're like,
because there's
well,
plenty of downs.
By
and
sheer will of
it.
For, you know, like force of will, like I'm going to make
so,
this
yeah,
happen.
Being, and so being resilient and just giving yourself permission to try.
Whatever you have to do, you will make sure it's successful. So it quiets a little bit of that fear of failure. In some ways, it heightens it because you're like, now I have people depending on me. But it also mm-hmm. makes you realize that you're going to do what it takes to be successful. And you know, kind of along the lines of being successful, one of the things I love about your story, and I think it also aligns with being a female founder, is that you know, when you look at that at the different ways that startups are getting their funding. You know, I think that there's this idea that this textbook is you know, do your angel friends and family round, then you do a series A and a series B. And there's this path of like fundraising that if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you go through. Meanwhile, they're really amazing startups who have bootstrapped it, who have grown via revenue. And to me, I'm like, there is not a right or a wrong way. The textbook, series A, series B, all of that path, it's a path, but that's not the path for everyone. And I love your story because you just grew via revenue and reinvesting. Saying that though, that's exhausting because it is always this battle of like, what have you done for me lately? Except you're saying it to yourself. It's like the next deal. And you're like, okay, well now we're reinvesting that. So what's the next deal? And what's the next deal? So tell me about that.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. I mean, I think the grass is always greener. And so I see people who raise, you know, $15 million and they don't have a product yet. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? That's gotta be luxury. You have all the space, you can hire anybody you need. I mean, that just sounds amazing. But it's a different set of responsibilities and issues. And for me, when I look at fundraising, you know, and getting an investor, I see it as I'm taking out a loan or a debt that I have to repay, and I have to repay it, you know, tenfold or fivefold or whatever their expectations are. And I see it that way for us too. You know, essentially all the money that the company is making all the revenue that the company is making goes into the company. So if we have this great, you know, contract and this big boost of money, we can finally hire that person to build this thing that much faster that gets us from A to B that much faster. And that's how we've always been, which helps us move forward. And then of course, as the leader of the company, you have to see that runway and say, okay, if we get A to B, what does our revenue need to be? What is, how many sales does that mean per month? And, you know, realistically, how do we hit those numbers? Because like you said, I mean, it's not just my family. I'm responsible for my contractors and my employees and stuff. You know, I got to earn that money because I have to pay them too. So bootstrapping has been very interesting. It is very exhausting because like you said, there are times when things get thin and hours need to be cut back. And that's probably the time when you could use extra help the most. And so we're having to do it, you know, ourselves as the business owners. But the balance for me, since we've started with a product and we already have customers and there's sales happening every day, do I take the time? Because it does take a lot of time and a lot of work.
Well, and you're so far ahead
exactly.
of the game.
And
so
do I take
as we
that
start
time
to kind of
away from my
close
company
out on time, one of the
and the sales to do the fundraising?
And so I was reading this quote, and then I want to get into
what I've been
driving
successful
piece
with,
of what you're doing.
Which is sales.
But
and just earn the money
I
that
read this
way,
quote that basically
without giving up equity. And like, so far that's been what we're doing,
like 8 to 10 years ahead of everyone else.
I would love
product, totally
to
you
be able
I mean
to
like
do both,
there weren't even
but
like,
I just haven't been able to
I mean I remember back when
I
you're talking about people were like
the time
wait
to
are people gonna
well.
Go mobile web or apps. I mean no one even knew what was going to happen with mobile web or apps, and now it's like so obvious, but back then people didn't even know if there were going to be apps for mobile web. And so, you know, when you think about that, you were so far ahead of things, which, you know, for those who are listening, when you're thinking about your phone, there are certain, like, within the phone, like an iPhone or an Android, there are features that when you go to certain websites, you can see like, oh, I can see what my, you know, chair is going to look like in this room. What Heather's doing with Cambrian is different than that. So that's a very like simple kind of built-in tool that's in your phone. So
Yes. And yeah, and talking about like seeing something in a space, if anything, Joel, my, you know, husband, my co-founder, he can see technology trends, like you said, about 8 years ahead of time, 5 to 8 years ahead of time. He knows where it's going. He's always known that.
And that segues into
we first started
the,
building the feature
again,
tracking
kind of give
that,
a computer vision.
That ended
so tell
up being
me about so I know your story
phones.
Because of Pipeline.
He's like, they,
but
they're going to do
us
this because they need
how
to.
You got
we need to focus on the segmentation, realism. And so, you know, we had a basic feature tracker, worked pretty well, but we put our focus elsewhere and it paid off for us because now it's released and we don't end up using theirs anyway. But you're absolutely right. And what we do is completely different than just putting a chair in a space, which is what anybody could do. Yeah, again, it's kind of a small community within, you know, computer vision and having kind of new cutting edge technology. We were approached by somebody that had worked with Joel at iVerify. And he was at a company and they were needing to hire computer vision experts to do basically camera position. Where's a camera position? I can't talk too much about the project or who it's for, but it's for a major car company and they're doing incredibly cool. I can't wait for it. Incredibly cool technology. And we are just, you know,
because you're defining different points. Like, how do I tell if this is a car stop?
They approached us with a problem and we were, you know, working through trying to figure out what the problem is and, you know, how might we solve this? And we're looking at research papers that were literally public, you know, we're looking at papers published in computer vision by top universities like that month. How are they solving these things? And how are we solving this? How would we approach this? And we kind of discussed a solution and we're like, that's almost exactly what we're already doing inside the house. You know, that's almost exactly it. And so, yeah, I mean, when we have to know, so if I'm looking into a room and I take a photo of a room or something, or I'm looking into it, I have to know how high, if I'm putting a tile in and I need to know what size to make that tile and how to tilt, you know, pitch, roll and angle of the room, or else it's going to look like it's veering off and it's going to look fake. You know, so I have to know where that normal plane is on the ground. I have to know how high I am from it to get the scale correct. I have to identify what's in the room and what's floor and what isn't. It was very similar to what we were doing. So I talked it over with the team and said, would you be interested in this project or not? And the team was like super excited about this project. And it was basically a way to get funded for the technology we're already using and already have built.
I love that. And what a great way to talk about computer vision, which is like we've started with
and
way
a lot
back
of the,
when they were just like, we didn't know what we were going to do with
using,
apps.
And then we also learned a lot
and now
by doing
it's autonomous
project,
driving.
And we're able to like,
what an amazing
the home.
Story you have.
And so when people are like, oh, you totally pivoted, you changed. And it's like, no, it's honestly the exact same thing that we're doing. It's just inside versus outside, really. And it was a really cool experience for the team. And we learned a lot from it and it, you know, paid pretty well. So it was like a win-win for us. Yeah. It was interesting because we've learned they had hired other teams to try and do this and had failed. And it kind of makes us feel like, wow, we're really one of the top people at this. And it, you know, we kind of have, you say it out loud and it's like, wow, we're just this small company in Kansas City, you know, that started from kind of this idea of what might be cool. And we had this vision of changing the future and really pushing humans ahead technologically and what we want our future to look like. And then to kind of take a step back and look at it. And it's like, wow, we're kind of doing that. And
I love that.
And then I wanted to say really quick, because I get asked
love
about
that.
This,
I didn't actually know
Cambrian.
That story.
So
I love that.
I'm a paleontology
love that as you're transitioning,
well, so
like
Joel,
you went from when you started like, I'm
geology
an entrepreneur,
nerd.
And now you're like, you know, I feel like you're having that kind of same
about, like, the Cambrian
now
explosion
where you're like, oh, wait,
when you
yeah,
had,
our technology
you went from basically
is cutting
slime
edge. That is
in the oceans,
single
cell organisms, to complex, the most bizarre living creatures. And it was like life was just throwing everything, just experimenting, and that's when you know things like vision
the space that you're
came into
and
existence
you
during the Cambrian explosion, and so we thought, wow, that really would do what we're trying to build justice, and so that's where the name Cambrian came from. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, I know that I'm going to be staying tuned for what's coming next from you guys. And I can't wait to see, especially when you say
well,
there's exciting
and
things
to look
coming
back
up
and be like, you know,
I think it already
nobody
is.
Else
so
made
I can't wait to see
contracts.
What all those
nobody
things
else look. Led this team. We did it. You know, I did it. And
I just
kind
thank
of
you
have
so
to remind
much
yourself
for being on this episode of Startup Hustle.
You know,
and
you
also,
can do all
I
these incredible things because you've done
I
all these incredible things.
Look where
it came from. And so that's been
take over Startup Hustle
an incredible transition.
We have absolutely
too.
Loved
like
the
said,
opportunity to spotlight
it's
some
very
of our
cool,
former
it's
fellows
very
and look forward
like,
to welcoming
what's
next
happen?
Year's class of the
what's
Pipeline family.
You know?
So be sure that you check out our fellowship program by visiting us at pipelineentrepreneurs.com. Heather, thank you so much for being on here. We will be following your success.
So cool. I can't wait till I can talk about it.
Completely remiss if I did not thank Startup Hustle for welcoming Pipeline Entrepreneurs and letting us take over Startup Hustle this week. We have absolutely loved the opportunity to spotlight some of our former fellows and look forward to welcoming next year's class to the Pipeline family. So be sure that you check out our fellowship program by visiting us at pipelineentrepreneurs.com. Heather, thank you so much for being on here. We'll be following your success.
Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.